Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer. Well, guys, you're in for a treat. We have a specific topic one, which we haven't done that in a while. We like to do parts because we are long-winded. Today's just Taylor and I. Jen is homesick. Hopefully she's not sick yet, but the kids were sick. So we're going about this. And we decided that we would talk about neurofeedback because that is a topic Taylor and I have more recently gotten invested in. And not even the fact that we didn't know about it or like it before, but we've decided to put a lot of time and effort and money, but time and effort specifically into being more educated about it and being more practiced in it and have higher proficiency in it. So yeah, this is something that both of us have had, I think, a personal connection with of learning more about and for different reasons.
Yeah. My favorite metaphor for neurofeedback is it's just holding a mirror up to the brain. Mm-hmm. You've known me many years now, Haley, and I hunch horrifically. Mm-hmm. I just need a bell tower to go live in. And anytime I see my reflection, I go, oh my goodness. And I just naturally straighten up more. Mm-hmm. I mean, just even talking about it now, I just straightened up.
He's like looking in the window and being like, oh yeah, there we go. I hunched more. So there you go.
Equilibrium.
Scoliosis for the win.
Scoliosis. Twisted sister. There you go. And just naturally seeing what I need to correct helps me correct it. Mm-hmm. Like when you put a mirror in front of your bowl on Halloween, if you're not handing out the treats, will lead to fewer people stealing all the candy just because they see their own behavior. Mm-hmm. And so neurofeedback just holds up a mirror to the brain so that it can self-correct and become more effective.
What I love about one of the principles of neurofeedback, and just by the way, too, to kind of cite where we're getting this info, we've really formed a great bond with this place called the EEGinfo.com. They're an institute specifically designed to go into neurofeedback. They're the ones that collect a lot of the data. They're the ones that have one of the best. They practice and have developed the Othmer method. The Othmers are actually the ones who started the EEG info. But they're the ones that we're kind of piggybacking data off of and making sure that we have like a reputable source for that. They've been institution that also I know like the state of California, especially in the LA area, has really depended on them to provide the best of trainings for people and to provide the best of services. So this is a place that we've done our homework on and looked into. And a lot of their info is what we're going to be citing today and putting it into a bite-sized version for you guys to kind of quickly hear about. And so one of my favorite principles that is taught with neurofeedback specifically through them not specifically through them, but like they're a great place that teaches us is that self-regulation is like the brain's main skill. It's like its main function. And I love the idea that with what Taylor's talking about with this mirror effect, that we're just helping the brain do what it does best with it, which is trying to regulate. Now, regulation does not always mean that it's doing the healthiest of skills, but it is trying to regulate, kind of like what we've talked about before with the idea of our brain and our body are designed to try to survive. That does not mean we do the best of things to try to survive. Sometimes we go along with a danger or we do something that's not the best for us in order to just get to the end. But if we can help our brain specifically learn how to self-regulate in more regulated, I just use the word to define itself.
In more adaptive ways.
In more adaptive ways, in more self-serving ways that are going to ultimately lead to a longer duration of progress. So in layman's terms, if the brain can do good things to self-regulate, even better, right? If the brain does things that are not good or not healthy, you're going to have a lot of barriers in the way that are just not going to lead to it to be able to do it for a long period of time. So we're teaching the brain how to do good things and make that the pattern, right? And so we're basing it off of a strength the brain already has is to learn and to adapt and to grow. and we're just helping it do it in a way that makes more sense for the symptoms you have. Another thing I love about this whole idea of neurofeedback, it's based off of symptoms, not off diagnosis. We pride ourselves in being super smart and going through the DSM-5 and knowing how to diagnose someone. Yeah. I've become very jaded about the idea of diagnosis because I've more and more realized symptomology per person. People are a lot more complicated than just a diagnosis in a book, right? And it's good to know where they're coming from. But what I love about especially neurofeedback, it focuses on the symptoms. It focuses on what's your sleep pattern. It focuses on behavior. It focuses on learning. It focuses on pain levels. It focuses all these different little things that create a person. And it helps regulate things that are out of control in each of those topics. So it's not just stating, can you think logically about coping skills? Like, it's asking, like, how often are you having like brain fog? How often are you having difficulty finding words? How often are you getting migraines? How often is your anxiety higher than a 5 out of 10, right? Like, what can we do to help each and every one of those?
The assessment for neurofeedback is quite extensive.
Yeah, that was something that in our more recent trainings, we really were surprised about, is how extensive. And it makes sense because also we're looking at family history. We're not just looking at the person. We're looking at what that family history looks like and how it could possibly impact the individual themselves. Because the brain holds on to a lot of information and doesn't always show all the information outrightly of what the potential is that it can do. Sometimes it holds that family history, which makes sense. And those things only come out when there are high stressors or different events that are happening.
I like where it comes to assessment and neurofeedback that it, while the original assessment that we all start off with is very extensive, that we then tailor it so we're not using the shock kind of blast approach for everyone, that we narrow it down to 18, 19 symptoms that are the ones that a client is coming in for, and then we track those. And that helps guide the approach of what are we targeting for someone rather than a one-size-fits-all approach.
And you can do even less symptoms if there are less big ones, right? But we could go up to, I mean, you could
that's the max, yeah.
Well, you could technically do more, but I mean, think about if we're, again, if we're trying to help a lot of different things, we want to be aware of all of them. 19 is about as many as we want to start tracking before it gets complicated, right? And so, but I love what you said about that too, is that it really, I mean, we live in a world of really loving being individuals and learning about what each person is capable of doing, which is why we have work assessments, character assessments, we have astrology, you know, things like that, where we want to know that we're different and we want to know that we have specific needs. Like being Virgos, we do this, right? Or being an ENFJ, I do this, right? Or being a color red or blue, or, you know, whatever it is, I do this. We love knowing ourselves and we love knowing that we're specific and unique. We're snowflakes, right? Some more than others. But at the same time, it's a scenario that, you know, I think with therapy, sometimes it feels like you're just copying and pasting the same things you have to work on for each person. And with this type of, you know, and again, this isn't therapy, this is brain training. This is different. We don't say this is a therapy session. We say this is a brain training session. Okay. This is a neurofeedback training session. This type of assistance, whatever we want to call it, is specifically designed per person using the same components to help with all these different symptoms. But each person, like someone who has migraines and has a history of bipolar, is going to have a different set of, you know, sights. Yeah. Sights and frequency things based off someone who has migraines and doesn't have bipolar. Like, it's kind of cool that like, there are so many different things that are going to happen. And so someone who has trauma growing up at an early age is going to have different sights than someone who is more recently experiencing some, you know, brain fog and things like that. So I love the facts of what you're saying of just so specific and so individualized, because we already kind of gravitate towards that. I mean, that's why we're like taking quizzes on what office character are you based off your individual qualities, or what color should you wear, or what is your body size? Like, we want to know things specifically for ourselves. So this just makes sense that this goes along with that in a popular approach, but at the same time, why it's so helpful, right?
So what is a site?
So we break up neurofeedback into three different things. One of them are sites. One of them is frequency, right? But let's go with sites first. And when it comes to sites, those are the different placements on your brain that correlate with different parts of the brain. Okay. So your brain is not just one conglomerate of muscle and that's it. There are different places in your brain that are in charge of different functions. Okay. So we've talked a lot about the amygdala and different things like that, that are in charge of like that fight, flight, freeze response, the frontal part of the brain, a lot of cognition, a lot of thinking through things. You know, there are certain parts of the brain that are in charge of hearing and motor skills, things like that. So when we talk about sights, there are different models, but essentially, then this has been around for a while. This wasn't like in the last 5 years. This was created and here's what it looks like.
So how long has it been around?
That's a really great question because
like there's an evolution to it.
Yeah. I'm looking up how long has the 1020 model for the brain been around? The 1020 system. That's a great question.
Because neurofeedback began in the 70s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let's
current iteration.
Let's talk about just the fact of like knowledge, acknowledging the brain. That's been around for more than decades, right? You have people like Van Gogh. Why am I saying Van Gogh? Da Vinci, that one. Another V. Da Vinci. We have people like that who have been studying the body and the muscles. The brain was also something people have been studying for a while, right? So the brain and trying to figure out what site is what, I mean, they've found things as early as Egyptian, you know, history, where they're looking at things and saying like, this part of the brain must be in charge of this. And they've noticed there are some very early civilizations who started trying to do brain surgery on their people who had issues. Like they're noticing this came back from millennia more than we thought, right? So
I thought the Egyptians thought that our thoughts resided in the heart.
They thought that, but then they're also noticing, maybe it wasn't Egyptian, it might have been like ancient Mesopotamia or something like that, but there were people during that same, maybe I was reading it in the sense of like there are people in that same time period as the Egyptians, but they're noticing that there was brain studies going on in these ancient civilizations. Like I'm trying to remember where I read it, but there was, they found like a mummy that indicated there was some sort of brain surgical thing that happened. Like there was enough like crisis damage that they were like, this was man-made and how they were trying to resolve it. Repination
goes back a long time ago.
Yeah. Then we hear about lobotomies. You know, this is something like the brain has been this mystery for so long, but they've started recognizing that there are different parts of the brain that are in charge of different functions, right? You hear about the guy who had the pipe run through his brain and had changed his behavior. And this was back in like,
when they were building the railroad.
Yeah.
Late 1800s.
Yeah. And so we have all these different things. So classifying where the sites are is a little bit more organized and newer approach to meet the needs of the EEG of, you know, tracking different things. But knowing that these different parts of the brain are in charge of different things, super long ago, right? And the sites on the brain that we use, you'll hear us say things like T3, T4, P4, T4, things like that. Simply, it's a numeric placement that they have kind of seen. It's
a shorthand for us to know where to place.
And they have developed these specific placements on the brain to correlate, to have the best reach to those certain places themselves on the brain. Because, you know, we can't like remove people's skulls and just work directly on the brain. That would be gross. And we can't do that ourselves as therapists, right? We're not trained. But on a person's scalp, you can see general placements of where different placements correlate to different placements of the brain and what those functions are for that place. So temporal lobes would be a T, and then numbers are assigned just so that you can know which placement is where. So you hear us about talking about sites. You never need to know this coming into it. Heads up. But we're not going to be like, so what temporal space do you think you need to work on? We have that information. That's why we're studying this. Second part about it is essentially the frequency, which is just like how specific are we looking into the brain waves? A big thing to say about neurofeedback, we are not inputting anything into the brain. Okay. This is not that type of therapy. This is not that type of treatment. 100% of neurofeedback, like Taylor said, looking into a mirror, we're observing. That's all we're doing. And we're letting the brain see itself, depending on what like frequency we put it at, the brain's functioning based off how it wants to see itself. Are we like zooming into the mirror? Are we not? What's happening? And the brain is taking that information and doing its own thing that, to be frank, we don't even know exactly what the brain is doing to change itself. We just know that the brain takes that info and says, let me fix it. And it does. Just like if your muscles, if you're working out on a treadmill and you start feeling sore and you take care of yourself, your muscles know how to fix it. That's what they're made for, right? It's to know how to fix themselves. The brain does the same thing. We're just giving it an outlet of how to fix it.
So when we sit down to do neurofeedback, what can someone expect? What does it look like?
First session is going to take about 90 minutes. Let's just, you know, first intake, right? We talked about that assessment. It's about 7 pages. They're also doing like a test. They're doing a first initial neurofeedback training. So meaning like they're getting hooked up and they're seeing what it looks like. So that first session is going to take a little bit longer. When we say quick test, it's like a little pad that it's electronic that you press buttons and it tests your
world's most boring video game.
Seriously. It tests like their impulse control, how their reaction time is. It gives us something to go.
Sustained attention.
We're also looking at the symptoms and identifying which main ones we want to be tracking during your neurofeedback. Then after that, each other appointment is only going to take about 30 minutes. We'll probably block off about 45 so we can like check in and do what we need to, but then
take some time to hook up and clean up.
Yep. And sometimes the hookup takes the longest because we're trying to make sure that the electrodes that we are, when we are placing them on the scalp, we're trying to make sure that they show that they are truly like picking up things. And sometimes we want to make sure they're in the best spot. So every session after that initial intake session is going to be neurofeedback training. It's just going to be identifying how was the week, you know, or how was the last couple of days. Ideally, we want to see someone twice a week. Ideally, that would be amazing. And not amazing as in like, if only, that really should be the standard. But we know some people can only do once a week. So
because of the reality of finances.
But anything longer than every week is really pushing it. And we're not going to see as great of results. And it's
like, why did I do that push-up last year for nothing?
I know. Taylor asks himself all the time. But it's also going to be about this idea of you have a harder time tracking how your symptoms were the day after, because we want to see like, hey, did this training do anything? Like, did it help? It's harder to be able to track that and have like more than a week in between. Even a week is hard. Okay. So every time you come in, we report on the symptoms, we track them. Sometimes we can show you the graph of like, hey, they're going up in the sense of like, we're noticing some bigger symptoms coming up, or hey, we're going down. We're seeing a good trend of like, we're getting those under control and manageable and they're staying consistent. This is great. We know some weeks are going to be harder for women, especially on their menstrual cycles. I've noticed their symptoms go up and they get frustrated, but a lot of them who've been doing neurofeedback, their symptoms still don't go as high as when they initially started. So it's nice to know they went up, but we're still not going to that same high level.
It's actually a really good indicator light, because if when you're typically having the hardest time and your hardest time is no longer as rough as it was before, that's a good indicator light.
Yeah. For men, if they had a really, honestly, health thing still affects them, both when it comes to anyone, a rough week at work, they got sick, whatever it is, those are great indicators to show, okay, when it was that more difficult time, what does that look like as far as your levels? So we do that. That only takes about 5 to 10 minutes. Sometimes we kind of redirect the client just, you know, to let them know like, hey, we do want to talk about things, but this is more of a training session rather than a talk therapy. And then we get them hooked up with the electrodes of the places we're trying to, you know, monitor specifically to help the brain improve function so they can improve the symptoms. And then we let them kind of decide what they want to do. And so Taylor kind of knows a lot about the options. What can they do for neuro? What does it look like when you're actually doing neuro? What options do you have?
So my personal favorite is watching a movie or a TV show. There are other options. We'll go through them. But
which I just brought my complete Office collection.
Oh, I see. Well, I didn't notice that before.
That was today. It's all good.
My favorite part about Office fans is they ask you what episode you're on as opposed to, like, do you watch the Office?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So when you watch a movie or a TV show.
Or YouTube.
Or YouTube, yep. Mm-hmm. Or Netflix. The screen will change size. It will get bigger. It will get smaller. It will get more clear.
When we say the screen, it's not the actual TV.
The TV is not changing size. It's not Willy Wonka.
The image.
Yeah, the image will shrink or it will get bigger. It will get more clear or it will fade out. The volume will go up and down. We have video games that you can play with a controller.
You can also just watch a simulation of
this. You can also watch a simulation, and then your brain will just make the car or the Wave Runner go faster or slower, mm-hmm. the spaceship, what have you.
Yeah.
So you can play a video game. That's one of them. Then there's also a Build-A-Bear that you can hold. It's more tactile. It's more sensory. And that will vibrate more strongly.
As you're doing any softly. Of those options.
Yeah, you can do that in conjunction with something else. And then there's music.
There's like some kind of meditative type of like kind of going through a tunnel and things like that. There's like, we have one for kids that's like watching like a choo-choo train kind of like going on its little merry way. And so kids can watch that and kind of be involved.
Yeah. Think like Cocomelon, but much, much slower paced.
Yep. It's great. So we have that. We also have Bluey. My kids and adults love watching that as well.
Bluey's fantastic.
But no, there's a lot of different, like you're saying, like there's just so many. I love the fact that like if someone doesn't like something, they have some other options. I've had many adults come in and say, I don't even know. I turn on SNL and they're like, oh my gosh, I haven't watched this forever, or The Office or something like that, or even like something like Bluey or, you know, whatever it is. We have a bunch of DVDs in the office.
Yeah. Sometimes people, when they're new to neurofeedback, get really hung up on, well, what should I choose? Like just something that you enjoy.
Yeah. And it doesn't, we're not going to judge you based off what you're saying. Like, ooh, they must have anxiety. They're choosing this video. Like a lot of people go, well, what should I choose? And I'm like, what do you want?
This isn't Freudian.
No. We're not going to assume things. And well, I mean, we probably will assume things, but.
But that's just because we're bad people.
That's a character flaw, not a therapy.
Yeah, it's not a therapy thing.
But it's really cool. It suits them. So hypothetically, if someone were to come consistently and do this for about 20 sessions, we would probably see their symptoms have resided and they would be able to function at a better capacity and they would be feeling better. But if other symptoms come up, we can always kind of do things specifically for those symptoms. We can do things to, you know, help with that, readjust it. But we're not also here to make this be a forever thing. We're here to, in fact, I love the idea with neurofeedback. It is like 20 sessions and we're going to try to get you out of here kind of thing. And then if anything comes up, we will do things to maintain. But this really, it gives you a pretty distinct time period. It won't be much more than that, really.
Yeah. So neurofeedback can address trauma, anxiety, depression,
ADHD.
ADHD. It can help with addiction. Mm-hmm. It can help with pain disorders. It can help with acquired brain injuries. So if you've had concussions, you've been in a car accident.
It can help with performance. There's been a couple that they've talked about, like athletes coming in to have a better performance. Academic performance is not doing as well. Poor concentration, poor work difficulty, those kinds of things they can go into.
Sleep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, huge with sleep. Yeah. So I actually.
Even snoring.
Yeah. So I do it for my snoring and for migraines. My husband's like, please bring it home. You need it. My husband does it because he just has a hard time. He sleeps really light. He has a hard time. It can help with anxiety, depression symptoms. One thing we do want to say though, neurofeedback is not a cure. Here's the caveat. Okay. So it targets the brain dysregulation, which is great, but this does not cure you of those things. It is simply stating that the brain is finding where the disconnect is of why we're not functioning. Because think about all these things we listed. Anxiety, a lot of that is because there is a disconnect as far as our brain and the different chemicals it's trying to absorb or not absorb and things like that. Thinking about ADHD, there's a disconnect with parts of the brain being able to talk to one another as far as regulation. PTSD, there's a disconnect. Sleep, there's a disconnect. Like a lot of parts of the brain are not working well together.
Or an organic condition such as a stroke or Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And that helps the neurofeedback will help the brain be more efficient to compensate for what has been lost in the brain.
And so this isn't saying that we're going to cure. It probably sounds like we're stating that, and we need to just be very careful we're not stating it's a cure, right?
So for example, we've talked about me having chronic pain. Mm-hmm. It has not made my pain go away, but it has made it more bearable.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's a big thing with like the seizure thing of what we were talking about too. Even if there aren't any more, you know, seizures after the training, you would still be someone who would be someone we would watch for seizures, right? It's not like it's like, we don't even have to worry about this anymore. Throw out the meds, throw out, you know, it's the idea of like the brain is still vulnerable to seizures. We're just helping the brain hopefully have more resilience so that it doesn't fall into that.
If anyone claims that their therapy or whatever they're going to do with you will cure you and take care of it, then they're a snake oil salesman and just be wary of it.
Mm-hmm. So we just want to make sure that like we're helping people understand like this is an amazing, unique opportunity, like to have something that can help behavior, stress and anxiety and peak performance in all of those areas. And
that's been researched for decades now.
Yeah. And it to have that, I think that's the big thing. And so if you're noticing like there are just things that just do not feel regulated, there are things that don't feel good. Not only do we provide it, like specifically us in the office with Xenia, Jen wants to provide that at some point, but right now she's not really meeting in person. So that's something that we've kind of talked about with her of like, hey, one day definitely do it. If that's an in-person thing, we have our office located in Utah. We have me, myself, you know, Taylor, we have another employee that works with it. And we do that in office here. But then also the great thing about it too is we have resources to know other placements that have gone through training.
We have a network.
And there's a network that we can find that. So if that was ever anything anyone was interested in, this isn't just a come to Xenia. This is also a, hey, we will help someone find whatever you need. Now there aren't a huge amount of people who have been trained in the modality. So that's something that we always are aware of, is that there is the percentage chance of someone saying, yeah, I do neurofeedback, but it's not as effective.
Yeah. Right? My, like there's pros and cons to every therapy. We've talked about pros and cons on this podcast before. The con to neurofeedback is the startup cost. It's expensive to access the equipment.
Yeah.
Whereas training in EMDR and ART, it's expensive to be trained in, but then there's no longer any cost to do it. You just wave your hand.
You don't have materials. Yeah.
Right. The cost is your arm gets tired.
Yeah. The gym bill. Yeah. But it's
the gym bill. Yeah.
And with neurofeedback, it's the training cost plus, well, okay.
The ongoing materials.
If you want to be effective and know the more.
You continue to pay for consultation.
Yeah.
The materials to continue to do it.
And be aware of like the new research and things like that. Yes. And that's something that especially for those of us who, for Taylor and myself, we've seen the benefit of being involved in being updated with all research, being updated with new things that we can make sure we are giving, I think, the best treatment possible. So I think that that's the thing to be aware of, is that with neurofeedback, we're saying definitely do it, but we're also saying be aware, who are you doing it with? Some people, they did one training and they're like, that's it, I'm done, let me just continue on.
And the kind of neurofeedback that we, for example, provide.
Yeah. And others, they're like, this looks like a good idea, let me try it out kind of thing.
And they just rent the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And then their clients don't experience benefits, or they get worse.
And it's one of those things that this is something of, you want to find someone who, this is such like a cool option. You want to find someone who like wants to get to know all the things they can to help be as updated as possible. So that's just something to be aware of.
So that would be the caution. My favorite thing about neurofeedback, outside of how cool it is, is how easy it is to do for the client.
Oh yeah.
There's nothing asked of the client other than to give us honest feedback about, like, for example, are you tired? Are you getting a headache? That's all they have to do. They don't have to want to get better, for example.
No.
Whereas EMDR and ART, which we love, the client has to want to get better.
Yeah. And they have to know where they want to go. I have a couple clients who are on the autism spectrum. What I love about it is in the past, talk therapy hasn't worked for them. It just, they go off tangent or they're like, I don't want to talk. And especially kids with autism, that's, you know, that's hard. That's hard for someone who is trying to understand how to function, let alone, can you tell me what's going on inside? Yeah, no, right? There's too many.
Yeah, they lack the vocabulary for it.
That's, yeah, it's a difficulty for them. Temperament is really hard to stay like regulated. With neurofeedback, there's so many studies.
Sitting in front of a TV, that's really easy.
Yeah, a lot of studies have shown how much it improves, and the fact that we're not having to do talk therapy during it is so helpful for them to get the results they would like without having to be a different person when they're obviously not able to do that.
Right. So my 2-year-old is delayed with speech, but she could do a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Yeah.
And it's been really helpful.
Yeah. So yeah, I think this is a great option. This is more of an informational episode of just like another modality, things you might want to know. If you have questions about it, feel free to submit those. We would love to answer any additional questions to like help you understand why this is something we're so excited about and why this is something that we're so invested in learning about. It's also just kind of an enigma where you kind of hear about biofeedback. It's a form of biofeedback. But neurofeedback specifically is more centered on the brain and observing that.
And biofeedback can be about temperature. It can be about breathing. Mm-hmm. I forget the other kinds. I've done the breathing biofeedback before.
There's like a sweating one. There's like...
Oh, is there really?
Yeah, which kind of I think correlates with temperature. But yeah, stuff like that. So yeah.
If you want to learn more, Haley's at my website, zenandcounseling.org, has more information, eeginfo.com has lots of information.
And our website actually links to that website to give additional info. They said we could put a lot of their information on our website, and then we also link it to theirs. So either way, you'll have access to that up-to-date information.
Other questions, you can reach out to us at fateresilience@gmail.com or on Instagram and Facebook, and Haley, Jenna, myself will get back to you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We would love to hear from you.